The voice of the Cougars on the Cougar IMG Sports Network, the Canuck of the Cougars, the professional, Greg Wrubell. Greg, how's your offseason treating you?
Pretty well. Now you say I'm a Canuck, but let's make clear I'm not a fan of the Canucks because they're playing the Calgary Flames, of course, and and so it's Flames all the way in this NHL first round series.
But I mean, as well rounded and verbose as you are, Canuck can also be a term used to say, you know, the Canadian, right?
Well, clearly,
the Canadian,
no, right? Clearly, okay. A Canuck is common, you know, common reference to anybody from Canada. But at this time, at this particular time, for the next couple of weeks. Canuck's kind of a four-letter word in my house.
So. Thank you for that transparency. I love it. Yeah. Greg, you got spring break off. How did you spend it? Were you with family, friends?
We just took off down to Arizona for a week last week during the kids' spring break.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Relaxing time, I think, for most guys, and in particular for you. I don't know what you're working on. What is your off season like, Greg? I think there's so many young men and young women that dream of doing what you do and being able to do it as well as you. But what is your off season like? We get to hear you all year, you know, through football, basketball. You got soccer, women's soccer as well. But now you're kind of slowing down. What are you gonna be doing this off season?
Well, as always, you're very kind, but it is seasonal work, and Darnell can relate. From about August through March and into April, you know, it's 6 and 7 day weeks, and then you have a few months where the schedule lightens up. Just at least in my case, I can't speak for Darnell, but in my case, you know, there aren't games to call between early April and early August. So you have those months to try and squeeze in as much vacation time as you can. And for me, there are always projects I'm working on. There are always a lot of often data and stat-based projects that I work on the off-season. Of course, with my association with IMG, we're working on next season's broadcasts and making sure that you know, clients are being well served relative to those broadcasts. And things seem to always pop up. You know, whether it's things like the NFL draft or NBA draft involving BYU players, off-season interviews with different coaches, as you know, developments occur. We'll see something soon, I think, with Dave Rose and his team. He's looking to fill staff, at least two staff members on his program. Things always seem to pop up, but yeah, it is the time of the year for me, at least, when things slow down a bit and I can start putting most of my energies into preparation for next season. There's always something new and different to do with next year's broadcast, and with the addition of the soccer games that we're now doing, you know, that's an additional maybe 15 to 20 broadcasts, you know, then they'll get ready for, and a new sport to cover and new places to travel, and just try and fit it all in by the time that you know, the next season hits.
Let's start off with women's soccer real quick. I know that you're a huge fan of soccer and the girls' soccer team. What intrigued you? What made you kind of make that move over onto the soccer field?
Well, IMG, you know, as the rights holder for you know, the radio rights holder for all of the sports at BYU, as many as they want to cover, you know, football and basketball were, of course, the marquee sports for a long time. When IMG kind of assessed what's the next sport we want to get into, you know, women's soccer was an easy and popular choice. You know, the program is an annual winner in the NCAA tournament essentially every year. Jen Rockwood is a giant in the game nationally. Her teams are perennially explosive and fun to watch and draw well at South Field. You know, right after football and basketball, while the two volleyball teams do very well in terms of an outdoor sport, you know, there aren't too many teams touching women's soccer at BYU right now. And so I think IMG looked at the possibility, you know, of expansion and what might be the next big sport on the horizon. And I think women's soccer was kind of a no-brainer. And I'm glad that decision was made because it's been a blast being involved with Coach Rockwood, her staff, and her players. A really good season last year, and I think even better things on tap for this coming season.
Yeah, I loved listening to the broadcast whenever I got a chance. You do a great job on the soccer field as well. I heard through the grapevine that you might have had a sit-down interview also with the man, Bronco Mendenhall. Are you able to talk about that yet? Have you had that interview with him?
That'll be coming up tomorrow morning, and it'll be a number of the local writers, and again, myself, guys who cover, you know, BYU, I think, most extensively on a day-to-day basis. The Broncos going to sit down and kind of wrap up, you know, the spring that just completed. School's now coming to an end, and kind of a set the table session for the summer, if you will. And so, yeah, I would expect the local writers, in addition to myself, all to get some time with Bronco. I'll be talking to him tomorrow morning.
Greg, it seems like he does a lot of roundtable-type interviews or with a lot of media present. You probably do more one-on-ones with him than anybody else. What do you notice the difference in how he interacts with you individually as opposed to when he's in a group setting when he's answering questions?
Well, it's funny because a lot of people tend to ask me a variation of that question, and especially Darnell most recently, relative to maybe any changes I've noticed in Bronco and how he interacts with the media. And I would say that nothing to me has struck me as incredibly drastic as much as kind of a natural progression of his comfort with the job and the responsibilities relative to the media. I guess I'm in a bit of a unique position, and you kind of alluded to it, Darnell, in that I do have a lot more opportunities for those one-on-one situations. I'm going to visit with him in his locker room before the game. I'll talk with him after the group has talked to him post-game. But you have those radio shows in week, and you have these other opportunities to kind of sit down and do it on kind of a one-on-one basis. And I think all that reflects is just the comfort of a decade in the position with the same guy doing play-by-play. We've had a lot of interviews over the years, and I think all you get is that comfort level that hopefully comes out in the things he says and the things he's comfortable in saying. But I feel really fortunate, and you don't have to be someone that has a ton of one-on-ones like I do, to I think appreciate both Bronco and Dave Rose for the way they interact with the media. I think both do a tremendous job, and I think that we in the local media are really well served by those two guys. I've seen Bronco get more comfortable in the job, and I think after a decade, he's kind of really settled into what it's all about.
Yeah, you mentioned the natural progression. I think we can all look at the way Bronco approached those interviews maybe early in his career and how he is now, and he does seem a lot more comfortable with not only the one-on-ones, but the group setting as well, understanding where the questions are going to come from and where he needs to, what points he needs to hit along the way. I think that's something maybe gets overlooked because it's not really something he probably prepared for a lot, becoming a head football coach. There are a lot of other things that are more important to him and to most coaches in getting that head coaching job and figuring those things out. And the dealing with the media, and it's changed over the years. You know that too, Greg, over the last 10 or 15 years, there's a lot more media scrutiny, and with the instantaneous nature of social media that they've had to adapt as well.
Very much so. And with Bronco in particular, I think a lot of what he has done in his first decade, or much of his first decade, has been very message-focused and message-based. And I think, by this stage of his career and this many years in the job, the message of what he stands for, what he hopes his players stand for, and what he hopes the program is able to accomplish, I think is rather well established. And I think moving forward, you might even see a coach that is more willing to open up on the other aspects of what you might call traditional coaching or interactions with the media. And I guess we'll see over the next few years, if we do notice that at all. But I really do think that the message component of his interactions is pretty well established by this time.
I don't know if you can tease any of the questions that you have on your list, but are you going to reflect on the past, focus on the future? What are some of the things that you're intrigued by?
Well, I do want to know just how much importance he is placing on that first month of the season, because so much does hang on that relative to anything BYU might accomplish next year from a national standpoint. That first game against Nebraska is as tough a one as you can schedule. And yes, they've just made a coaching change, and there are reasons for that coaching change. But, Nebraska is as formidable an opener playing in Lincoln. And you don't need to – I mean, Darnell's as good as anyone to talk about the challenges of opening at that stadium against that kind of crowd with a program that, again, even their down years aren't that bad. I mean, their down years for Nebraska – but that's because the bar has been set so high. And again, I don't know that BYU could find a tougher opener, even though you are talking about a new staff coaching its first game. And that really is, I think, maybe the great equalizer. Often those first games with new coordinators, especially on the offensive side, they're a bit of a crapshoot. And I think if BYU is to gain any advantage, they'll take it from that opener standpoint, which leads me to, how many players will BYU be down for that game. If we're to presume Darnell and Ben that there are going to be some players, missing, just, and again, we're having to do a lot of presuming and inferring based on what's been said by BYU relative to the Miami Beach Bowl aftermath and things at the end of the season.
The 10-ish players, right? 10-ish?
I mean, how many and for how long, and can you reasonably expect to be as good as you need to be to win in Lincoln if you're down a number of higher-profile guys? And I'm not sure how much Bronco is ready to talk about that, but it is a question I do have about just that first month. The games are as big as they come with Nebraska, Boise, UCLA, and Michigan, back-to-back-to-back-to-back. I mean, it's an incredible month for BYU, and if they're excellent in that month, the sky could be the limit. And if they struggle in that month, a lot of fan interest will wane after September. And that is the perennial challenge of independence, is it not? The stakes are very high, especially early. And beyond that, I want to get Bronco's feel on, if not chemistry, because I think chemistry is maybe sometimes overused. And really, Ben, you can speak to this too. When you have 100 to 120 guys, chemistry is kind of an elusive trait. There are so many guys and different divisions that chemistry can maybe not be used to describe a 120-man group. But I would like to talk about maybe that kind of unity and purpose, if you will, in terms of how well he believes that this entire group is on the same page in every way. And so those are some thoughts I might have for Bronco tomorrow, just beyond the usual tactical things about what kind of team he thinks he will have, especially at the defense, on the defensive secondary and in the offensive backfield.
He needs no introduction. You know his voice. He is the voice of the Cougars on the Cougar IMG Sports Network, the Canuck of the Cougars, but not a fan of the Canucks, and the professional Greg Wrubell. I like all those questions that you're going to be throwing out. I'm going to be interested to see what comes out tomorrow. Something that Darnell and I were debating earlier in the show is, I wonder if he believes truly, and I don't know if he would be upright and honest about this, if he believes truly that he can break through that once, BCS barrier, now the New Year's Six game. I once upon a time when I was there at BYU, I got the information from the coaching staff that Bronco Mendenhall believed that he could take BYU to stardom, to greatness, and or to be an elite team in the nation by that 8 to 10 year mark. We're now in that 10 year mark for him, and I wonder how confident he is. Greg, do you often wonder that?
Well, I do know that he believes the challenge of independence has kind of changed the game a little bit in terms of expectation. It's no longer, a Boise State situation where you have to be the best of maybe a lesser group of teams to find yourself in now a New Year's Six situation. BYU is having to beat teams that, taken as a whole, will exceed the strength of schedule that any G5 team, a Boise State, would have to confront in the course of a given year. So the standards have changed a little bit for BYU, but it's a fact. In the era of the BCS and now the New Year's Six, a team like Boise appeared in three of those games, and BYU didn't get close to one. And I know that BYU feels itself to be a program, on a par with the best of the G5s. It simply hasn't worked out that way for BYU. And now you are, and although I believe BYU is going to be as competitive as it can be relative to the new cost of attendance protocol in college athletics, there is still going to be that annual windfall that goes to P5 programs and not to BYU that is going to increase and continue to widen the gulf, the fiscal gulf between the P5s and the non-P5s. And I don't know what Bronco believes the window to be, but I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that, by the year 2020, 5 years from now, if BYU's not in a P5 situation, they may never be in a P5 situation. And again, that's not a line in the sand, but I don't think it's a stretch to believe that by 5 years you would expect something to have happened. And if it hasn't, what will be the next tipping point? Because I really do believe that, in 5 years from now, enough checks will have been cashed to where BYU will see a very notable disparity between itself and the teams it is scheduling on an annual basis to try and stay at the top of the game, nationally.
Interesting points on Boise State and scheduling. And I'm thinking aloud here, and I might be ignorant to facts that have already been discovered, but, you know, we've been talking this offseason about how BYU is considered now a P5 in regards to scheduling. You know, the SEC, ACC coming out, and including, even though the Pac-12 hasn't been vocal about it, I mean, they've scheduled BYU, so I imagine they consider BYU to be a Power 5 as well. Yet, at the end of the year, say BYU is ahead of Boise State in ranking, but Boise State had a nice season like they did last year, and typically they would go to a New Year's Six bowl game from the G5, highest-ranked G5. Would BYU substitute Boise State from that G5, and could they be considered that G5, or would they have to get another at-large bid?
They'd have to be an at-large, and that's really what I wish could have been negotiated at the time, mm-hmm. was that when the new parameters were set, that BYU could have found itself lumped into that non-P5 group with the G5. You know, if it could have been best of G5 and independence, mm-hmm. excluding Notre Dame, of course, I think BYU would have been in a position that doesn't certainly solve the fiscal puzzle, but it does give you the access that you might reasonably expect, and they're not there. I mean, they have to be an at-large, and so there is no substituting, there is no taking the place of, and I really wish somehow it could have been negotiated that BYU could, you know, be in that same grouping. But the G5 were in no hurry to admit BYU to the group, and let's remember at the time, and I think Darnell, you could confirm this too, that there was a time when BYU simply was not represented in those meetings. There were conference commissioners from the G5, there were conference commissioners from the P5, and there was Notre Dame, but there was no other independent representation. BYU was kind of shut out of the discussion at a very key time. And so it's one thing I wish could have been negotiated that was not, and so as it is, BYU has team fighting, you know, for access as an at-large. The point you bring up earlier about P5 considering BYU from a scheduling standpoint, you know, the ACC and the SEC had to make those statements clear because they have the requirements. The other leagues don't. The other leagues haven't said as explicitly as the ACC and the SEC, there has to be that P5 non-conference component every year. And those other conferences have already shown that they are willing to schedule a program like BYU without a great deal of concern for that designation.
Greg, as we're talking about scheduling, Ben and I were talking about maybe some opponents for BYU to schedule in the future. And the way I look at it is, what stadium haven't I been to that I'd like to see? Is there a stadium that you haven't been to that you would really like BYU to go play in so you could say, yeah, this is great, I've been here, this is awesome?
I'd like them to get Oregon on the schedule. I would like to get to Austin and really feel what that's like. They've played Oregon, but it's been in a bowl game. I did do a game against Oregon in a bowl game, and then the Ty Detmer days, but not for a long time. So of the Pac-12 teams that BYU regularly now schedules, and they have a lot of them on the schedule, I'd like to see Oregon get back on there. The fact that I get to go to Memorial Stadium in Lincoln and Michigan Stadium in the same month is a strike of good fortune, because those are two stadiums I really wanted to visit, and now I get to see them both in the space of a few weeks. And so those are two that I can kind of check off the list now. You know, the fact that BYU's been able to play Notre Dame multiple times and get to the Rose Bowl, play UCLA multiple times, and I've been to the Coliseum with USC. I've gotten a little bit of an SEC taste at places like Alabama and at Mississippi State and Ole Miss. I suppose that I would probably like to maybe take on a team like Florida or the Horseshoe in Columbus. So I mean, let's go with Florida and Ohio State as two that I would really like to get to before this thing gets too long.
Love it. The voice of the Cougars on the Cougar IMG Sports Network. On with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Greg, any news on the basketball front? Candidates that you've maybe heard are in the running. I'm sure there are many applications that have been submitted. Names like Quincy Lewis have been thrown out. Madsen has been thrown out there. Any thoughts on BYU rounding out its staff?
Well, I think on the operations director standpoint, I get the sense Dave's really close on that one, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's somebody that has had some ties to BYU in the past. So I think he's pretty close on the ops guy, at least from what I'm hearing, and that's not a done deal, but I think that you could say he's close, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's somebody that's had some connection to the program in the past. From the assistant coaching standpoint, last time that he made a hire, when he brought in Mark Pope, I think it's accurate to say that Mark and Quincy Lewis might have been among the very last two guys that Dave Rose considered. So, you know, taking that, you know, for what it's worth, you would expect Quincy to at least be back in the mix again, because I think it wouldn't be unfair to say, or at least totally inaccurate to say, that those are probably among the last two guys you looked at last time. So I would think Quincy would be back in the mix again. If Quincy has that interest, I think that it's something Dave would be considering. And the other names are names that we've, you know, a guy like Barrett Peary, who's again available. He's had some connection to the state. Dave knows him. He'd been at Indian Hills, then at Arizona State this past year. He's somebody obviously with ties to the area. That would not be a surprising candidate. But the names that we've, you know, generally been expecting to hear about that we're hearing right now. You know, there's always the chance of a wild card that comes out of something like the Final Four, where you don't know a guy has that kind of interest, but he has to be the right fit in every way for Dave and for this program. So I think that's where things are right now, and Dave's timetable that he gave to writers like Darnell and myself earlier this week, I think is reasonable. You know, within a few weeks from now, end of this month, beginning of the next month, you can have those two guys ready to go.
Greg, I was looking at the staff as it's constituted right now, looking up some names and things, and I'm seeing here Terry Nash has been an assistant coach since 2007, and I really hadn't thought of it in those terms of him being around that long. Mm-hmm. Isn't he in this spot now where if somebody's hired as a lead assistant ahead of him, doesn't that put him in a position where he's thinking, maybe I need to move on, or maybe this isn't the right spot? I mean, as the longer you have assistant coaches there, the more they maybe feel like they're the next guy, don't you think?
Yeah, well, Dave is yet to really, the next staff yet being put together, we don't know who would have, you know, that quote-unquote number one designation. And really, it's almost informal in a lot of ways.
It does seem that way, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's not, you know, unless you actually give somebody the title of associate head coach, you know, the three guys on your staff, if you were to, you know, if you were to try and designate any of them a number one, it is kind of informal. And there are some coaches that distribute their, you know, the duty and responsibility in such an equitable way that you really don't think of one of the guys as the right-hand man or the number one. But I will say this, relative to Terry Nash, since you brought him up. Terry is the most, I think, underappreciated member of the staff, only because he's been a coordinator now for the last 8 seasons. People don't maybe necessarily know this is the way it's gone, but for the last 4 seasons, he's been the offensive coordinator for Dave Rose. And for the preceding 4 seasons, he was the defensive coordinator for Dave Rose. And those 4 years were BYU's best 4 defensive years of the Dave Rose era. Those were the Jimmer years, the Jack Zabuo years, but Terry was the defensive game planner during those seasons, and the numbers were excellent. BYU's numbers were tremendous relative to the other 6, you know, through now 10 seasons. And so the best 4 years of the Rose era defensively were when Terry was kind of given the task to run the defense, if you will. That's when Dave Rice was calling the offensive plays, right? And then Dave Rice leaves, and Dave goes from Terry and takes him from the defense to the offense, and the last 4 years of offense have been very good, even with some challenges relative to personnel. Terry ran an excellent, and the numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah, Greg, what did they rank the last 2 years points per game offensively?
Well, you know, this past year they were second nationally, and I believe they were top 10 the year before. Jeez. They've been in the top 3 in 3 of Dave Rose's years since he's been the head coach, and more than just points per game, it's those offensive efficiency numbers and tempo numbers that are so impressive for BYU over the last 4 seasons Dave Rice did an excellent job too with Jimmer, of course, but since Terry taking control of the offense, the numbers are very good. And so you look at Terry as a coordinator, you look over these 8 seasons and you say, wow, when he was in charge of the defense, they were really good. And now he's in charge of the offense, they're really good. Now it's still Dave Rose's program. I mean, this is this thing, whether offensively or defensively, has Dave Rose's thumbprint firmly on it. But one of the things that I know Terry appreciates most about Dave is the sense of freedom and autonomy he gives those guys. Dave's not calling plays. If Dave gives you the offense, you're going to call those plays. And it's Dave's style, it's Dave's philosophy, it's Dave's imprint, but those coaches have a lot of responsibility, freedom, and leeway, to call the game that Dave's given them the task to call, and no one's been any better than Terry Nash. I'm a huge Terry Nash fan for what he's been able to accomplish in these last 8 seasons, and I don't think that he has any kind of sense relative to, oh, you know, the time is right, or I'm not maybe in the right place, because I know that he feels there could be nobody better to work for than Dave Rose.
Greg, as always, it's our pleasure to have you on our airwaves. I look forward to doing it again. Good luck to the Flames as they face off versus the Canucks.
Big win last night, down 1-0 after two. Hadn't played their best hockey through two periods. Kind of a shaky game for a lot of guys seeing their first playoff action because, as you know, Ben and Darnell, it's been 6 years since Calgary's been in the playoffs. But they get in and down 1-0 after two. Great third period. Score with 30 seconds to go in the third. Great start to the postseason. The sea of red, once they finally get back to the Saddle Dome, the sea of red will be in effect. And if you get a chance to get to a TV when the Flames are playing here in the next couple of weeks, take advantage to do so. They play a fun style. And when they get back home, that place will be rocking.
The Canuck of the Cougars, Greg Rebell. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.